Rachel Carson grew up in a world where airplanes would fly hundreds of miles over crops and entire islands spraying poisonous chemical compounds to eradicate mosquitoes, and where those chemicals were also sprayed on people to keep them safe from various insects and diseases. A PBS New American Experience documentary called Rachel Carson explores her pioneering fight to inform the public about the dangers of chemical compounds present to nature, the environment, and that they present to nature, the environment, and human life. It premieres January 24th on PBS at 8 p.m., and I'm very pleased it has brought co-producer Rafael de la Uz to our show now. Welcome. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, Rafael. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm well. What led Rachel Carson to develop her interest in nature and the environment in the first place?
Well, she grew up in a very rural area around Pittsburgh, and her mother, she was very convinced that nature was a great place for a kid, a little kid, to learn. And her two older brothers were not that interesting on sharing the curiosity of Rachel Carson's mother. So the mother did a big effort to make sure that this very smart little girl follow her passion. And
But Rafael, she didn't study biology in college. Didn't she study literature?
She went to study literature, and she ended up going into the biology. Everybody thought she was going to be a writer. Well, she ended up being a writer, but she developed a big interest in science when she was in college.
Didn't she become the sole breadwinner of her family? How did that affect her studies?
Especially after she graduated, she couldn't go to follow, like, keep studying. She couldn't do that. She has to take problems. Her father wasn't really earning enough money, and so she took over her whole family, and that's when she went to work for the Fish and Wildlife.
A job that was atypical for a woman of the time. I think we're having a little problem with our connection to Rafael de la Uz, and we're talking about Rachel Carson, a PBS documentary about her, which airs on PBS tomorrow at between 8 and 10 p.m. Rachel Carson, who pretty much changed the world's attitudes about herbicides and pesticides and their safety, very controversially, was very influential. At the same time, came under incredible attack during her lifetime. Do we have him back? We have you back, Rafael?
I'm here.
Okay, well, we had a little problem with that connection. I was asking whether that job that she had was kind of atypical for a woman of the time. Were there other women also working in an area that involved fish and wildlife?
Yes, well, you look at the pictures of her sitting at the office, stuff like that. You will see she has some colleagues working with her that were female. Rachel wasn't that enthusiastic about this job. But somehow she managed to find that it was that the scientific material she was confronted with, because that position, it was good for her writing and inform her books. But she was very conflicted for many, many years about that work and her writer aspirations.
What was her first book about?
Well, the first book is probably one of the most interesting books, this Under the Sea Wing. And it's really about the ocean. It's really about telling the story of the ocean. It's understanding what's happening under the water. And what is very impressive is that particularly nobody knew about that. I mean, right now we are used to have so much science information, and we kind of like get familiar with these topics. But back then, I cannot recall the year she wrote this book. It's like nobody knew about this. And there's this woman writing this, the history of the ocean. It's a biography of the ocean. It's fascinating. It's fascinating. It didn't do that well as the Sierra Rangos, or obviously Silent Spring. But after the Sierra Rangos became a big hit, it kind of like people got interest on this, on the DC Wind again.
Now, how did she become interested in the impact of herbicides and pesticides?
Well, it came to her from different sources. That wasn't something that she was fascinated about. There was a lawsuit in Long Island, and some people tried to convince her to do this. She knew when she was on the Fish and Wildlife Department that there were some investigations going on in Maryland with pesticides. So this was something that was on her mind, but it wasn't a topic that she was really interested about writing. About this, she was the ocean, the beauty of nature, that was fascinating her. And this pesticide killing insects and bugs, and it wasn't her, what she was really loved. But she found there was a story there, and she found that the story that needed to be told. And it became her more famous book. These days, you ask people about Rachel Carson, and unfortunately, most people don't know who she is. But when you say Silent Spring, you can get a glimpse of people, oh, that rings some bells. And it's a book that is totally different for her body of work. It's the weird book. There's no, she wasn't that kind of writer, but it's the book that made her extremely famous.
Although her second book, The Sea Around Us, was a success.
Very successful. The bestseller list of the New York Times for many, many years, yeah.
And that allowed her to have all sorts of luxuries she couldn't have afforded previously.
Especially allow her to quit her day job. She was a very pretty frugal person. But one of the things that she really wanted was to have that little cottage that she built in Maine, in Booth Bay area. And she needed to find ways to get there. And so she had her house here in Silver Spring and this little cottage. And it bought her something else. She became a very respectable writer. So that was a good thing for Silent Spring, because all the New Yorker attention helped a lot to grab people's attention on the book.
I'm speaking with Rafael de la Uz, who's co-producer of a documentary called Rachel Carson, A New American Experience, which airs tomorrow night between 8 and 10 here in New York on the WNET. It's on other PBS stations as well. How did you get involved in making this film?
So Mitchell Ferrari, the writer, producer and director, so she have a long-standing relationship with American Experience. And when we were on the tracks to make a different film, and all of a sudden there was a request to come to an idea of something about science and women in science. And so the team of American Experience and Michelle and me on different sides of this research to find something, we both came to the conclusion that Rachel Carson was a good film. And there's a previous American Experience on Rachel Carson is, I think it's 25 years old. So, but the executive producer of the series, they have no hesitation of thinking, oh, it's time to update this story. And so we went in to make the film.
What? How did Rachel Carson come to suspect that DDT wasn't all that people were claiming it was? It was called a magic bullet, and it was pretty much used everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, I mean, DDT and the atomic bomb are the big heroes of World War II. If you think about the contribution of technology in World War II, and it was very hard to get off from that path and start thinking about bad consequences or negative effects of DDT. But Roger Carson was as somebody in our film put it, she was a master synthesizer. So she was able to read and collect information for all the science research, put it together. And there was a lot of problems with the DDT spraying all around the country. It was the fishing and hunting communities in the country were upset because, you know, the fish were dying on lakes, the birds were dying everywhere. So it was clear that it was a problem. And what Rachel Carson was able to do was to put all the puzzle together with what the science community was saying and what was happening on the field. And she put all the puzzle together.
Well, couldn't you buy it in a local store as something to kill insects?
You can buy it everywhere. You can look at the film. You can see how, like, you can buy, like, papers to put on your chops in the kitchen. They were sprayed with DDT so you didn't have ants coming. There was painting to put on the doors in your house to avoid insects coming in. You could just spray your own garden. DDT wasn't even considered toxic. You look at the footage there. They are spraying kids in their school lodge.
It was credited with saving U.S. soldiers during World War II. But what was the Great Cranberry Scare?
Well, I think it was in Oregon. Probably, I don't know exactly what it was. It was in Oregon. They found out that there was some of the cranberries were being sprayed on the wrong moment of the growing process. So that could affect them and make them toxic for people to eat. So Thanksgiving comes, it's the big time for the cranberries, and all of a sudden it's this news that the cranberry was it was infected with DDT that can be dangerous for people, and it created big, big media splash. There was a lot of people throwing cranberry away, supermarkets taking cranberry out of the shelves, and there was a political thing, Nixon eating cranberry in front of everybody on cameras, so like to support the agricultural community. At the end, it seems like nothing really happened to the cranberry, but the fact that it was possible, it created a lot of attention.
Now, didn't insects start showing resistance to DDT?
Yes, yes. Well, that's one of the main things about DDT. It was a magic bullet, but it was considered a magic bullet, but it was becoming kind of ineffective. And you create an arms race, like where you have to spray more DDT because the insects are being resistant, and you kill the insects that are not resistant, but the ones that survive, they populate again, and you have another layer of insects that are even more resistant. So what do? You keep spraying more and more, or you switch to another insecticide or another pesticide. And that was one of the important things of silent spraying, because Rachel Carson never said, I don't think we should use DDT. What she's saying is, I think we should know what we're doing.
How did she learn that she had cancer, and how did her doctor contribute to what may have been the shortening of her life?
Well, this story is a little bit nobody knows why exactly the doctors hide information. So she goes to a doctor, she gets a tumor removed, and the doctor failed to tell her that it was malign, it was bad cancer, and it was metastasized on her body. And there's different theory why the doctor wouldn't release that news to her. It seems that there was a common practice back then, like doctors to consider that women were not strong enough to handle this information, and they would deliver the news to the husband. But Rachel Carson wasn't married. So that's it's obviously a speculation why the doctor didn't tell her, but it's not clear if knowing that he could have saved her life, but at least but she didn't go into any treatment because she didn't know.
Was she still working on Silent Spring at the time?
She was working on Silent Spring all that time. It was extremely tiring for her.
Now,
to be able to do it, there was a moment she couldn't see. She needed somebody to write her, to read her own writing back to her, so she was able to do correction. It was a painful process for her.
Silent Spring created a real sensation when it was published in September 1962, but wasn't there a backlash, an attempt to discredit the book?
Yes, and it still is. It still is. There was a first. There was the chemist industry, the Monsanto corporation. There was a whole thing about there was this kind of like hysterical woman just whining and complaining about the evolution and the technological progress of the industry and technology, and they really made an effort to try to discredit her science because, yes, she didn't write the book as a biologist. She wrote it as an author, but she's basing her book on what science is saying. So the book is true in a way. They tried to kind of make the messenger to look ridiculous to avoid having any conversation about the message. But
her work has prevailed in the end.
It prevailed at the end. There's a retro report today in the New York Times when you can see there's still people that accuse her of the research of malaria in Africa and kind of thing, but that shows you that they never read the book because she never lobbied. She didn't try to do anything about banning malaria, banning DDT. But what she did, and that's a debate that, we still don't know how to do it, is to put the question there of, okay, well, we shouldn't just rely on science and technology without really knowing what we're doing. And unfortunately, I think we still don't know how to have that conversation.
What effect does exposure to DDT have on the human body? It's being sprayed on us, or whether we're eating meat or fruit or vegetables that have been sprayed?
Yeah, the defenders of DDT they claim that DDT is not clearly toxic to humans. And it's not clear to humans. DDT accumulates on the fatty tissues. That's why it's so devastating for birds. And so it can be in our lungs. It can be in all the fatty tissues of our body. The thing is, it was applied to our food. It was applied to the kids were sprayed with that, without knowing what was really happening to us with this.
Rachel Carson, A New American Experience, premieres on PBS stations tomorrow night here in New York between 8 and 10 p.m. My great thanks to co-producer Rafael de la Uz for talking to us about it.
Thank you.